guys, it's Amanda here. Before we get started with today's episode, I just wanted to play a quick ad from some friends of ours, That Sorta Weird podcast. If you haven't heard of them already, go check them out, but I'm just going to play a short little clip describing what they're all about.
If you're interested in topics such as cryptids, airline crashes, aliens, true crime, technology, conspiracy theories, disasters, paranormal activity, religion, science, and pop culture, then That Sort of Weird might be a podcast you'll want to add to your library. The new That Sort of Weird podcast explores all these topics and more while trying to be informative, critical, and humorous. Your hosts, Mike and Iris, have worked together in the podcasting space for over a decade now and have a unique chemistry, one that just might draw you in and make you laugh. New episodes of That Sort of Weird drop every 2 weeks and can be found on Apple Podcasts and all other podcast delivery systems. If you're old school and listen from your desktop PC, just head over to thatsortofweird.com to listen to new and archived episodes. So fire up your favorite pod app and search for That Sort of Weird to subscribe and listen today.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to another wonderful and riveting episode of One Nothing Podcast. We are ringing in our 11th episode and doing it in style, and I have a real treat for you guys today. We have a couple special guests. If you've been listening to the past few episodes, you might already have an idea of who they are. These two women are the most badass pillars of true crime that you'll ever meet, and they have an extensive library of over 60 wild and super interesting episodes. And they just recently celebrated being welcomed on to the Apple Podcast platform. So I'm hoping you all join me in welcoming two very good friends of mine, Samantha and Tracy from the Suspended Sentence Podcast.
Hey.
Now every introduction should be done like that.
Seriously.
That was great.
I like to bring you in style.
Yeah, that you're our new hype girl. Love it.
So why don't you start us off by just telling us a little bit about your podcast, what got you starting into podcastry, and how that path went.
Yeah, so we started, we're pretty new still. We started in March, and we've been talking about this for a really, really long time. I'll let Tracy kind of talk a little bit. This kind of started from her program IDP, and I'll kind of let you touch on that spot and then jump back in here.
Okay. All right. So I work in the mental health field and wrote a book, started an incarceration diversion program that I ran. It was a private probation program out of Wyoming for 5 years. And that is where our thoughts and really why we wanted to start the podcast or a podcast in general. And then it just kind of went from there. And then we were like, oh, let's just kind of bring it all together and collab with people and tell everybody's story and talk about crimes that happen that nobody's ever caught for, or that they are caught and get, you know, just a ridiculous sentence for. Talk about everything, crime, addiction,
mental health,
and throw it all into one and just kind of educate people.
Yeah. And I just have been always obsessed with like true crime. So I've always been, I listen to a whole bunch of other podcasts and books, and I'm always into that. So it was kind of a good little mesh of her expertise and
and your passion.
Okay, that sounds weird.
and then we meet people like you.
Aww. Well, let me tell you, you guys have the most phenomenal origin story. I did not know that you had a book written and out there. So I'm really excited. I want to know more about that later because I definitely want to check that out. Congrats on the incarceration program for 5 years. That's amazing. You guys are phenomenal. And I love you like 100 times more knowing all of this about you now. So so you kind of ruined the next feature, which is okay. But the next one was going to be a little game that I like to play with my guest stars. I did it with David on episode 9, and it was a lot of fun, and I call it red flag, green flag. So it's just a fun way for me to get to know you guys. So I'm going to have each of you tell me one thing about yourselves that you would consider a green flag, or something that somebody would say is like a positive attribute to yourself. And then tell me one thing that would be a red flag or something that would have someone else be like, ooh, and doesn't have to be like crazy personal, but it's just a fun, like silly way to get to know you guys. So.
Ooh, that is good. Okay. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay. So green flag for me would be I work really, really hard and am incredibly loyal.
Oh, that is a really green flag.
I always keep my word. So if I say I'm going to do something, I do it. That's a huge green flag, I think. Red flag for me. I have 5 kids and I'm super independent. I'm very strong-willed.
Well, I don't know. It depends, I guess, on what circles you're in, if that's a red flag or not. But I guess some circles would consider it, so it counts. But that's crazy. That's
impressive. I think it's definitely a red flag. When I've got something to say, I say it.
I love it.
I guess my green flag, I'd say, like, if I, like, I feel like I'm a very loving person. I feel like I love with, like, my whole heart. If I know you and, like, you're, like, kind and a good person, like, I'm on your team. And I just love really fiercely. I'm the oldest of 5 kids, so I think my red flag. I don't know. I have lots of green or red flags. I think a funny one, though, is, like, I don't drink water. I am a Dr. Pepper drinker.
And oh, gosh. You're alien to me. I don't understand your ways.
I will go like a week without drinking water and be like, oh
my God. If I go more than like 2 hours without water, I make it everybody's problem. It's like, give me water.
I like Dr. Pepper.
I like water. Which is good. I'm the complete opposite of that.
Well, you guys have some killer green flags, like somewhere in the world, the Grinch is turned on. Like those are really good green flags, like super impressive. You guys are just awesome people. I love you guys so much.
Has anybody ever done that to you? What would be your green and red flag?
My green flag is I would literally put my life in front of a train for any animal, regardless of species. Well, I guess that could be a red flag in some circles too, but I am animal obsessed. Like I would literally die for someone's dog that I just met 5 seconds ago. And I'd be perfectly fine with it. Like I have no, for whatever reason, like even in TV shows, I can watch people die all day. But if a dog dies, even like a cartoon dog, it like hurts me to like a deep core that I can't really fathom yet. My red flag would probably be I get bored really quickly. So if like it's proven challenging in the dating world for sure, because it's just like guys naturally want to move at a quick pace, and I don't want that quick pace, but I don't like slow paces. Like I don't want it to be stagnant, but I don't want it to be like someone throwing themselves at me. It's just this weird thing. And I always like, I'll talk to them for a few days and then I just stop replying because I'm like, I just lose interest. And I know that's really bad. I'm trying to work on that part of myself. I don't like that part of myself. But yeah, that's my red flag.
That's awesome.
I think that's your green flag.
I think it's a green flag too.
I know a few people who might disagree, but I love that you're behind me.
I know. We got your 6, girl.
I appreciate you, man. Oh, gosh. Well, that was fun. I enjoyed that. I think that's going to be like a regular staple. So for the listeners who are wondering why I haven't done question of the week in a while, because I did get some messages about that. I just took a break for episode 10, mostly because I really wanted our survivor to have like the full episode. I didn't really want to interrupt them with doing our segments and making this long drawn out thing. It was a special. We just took pause. Okay. Calm down. We're coming back. We will have one at the end of this episode along with our normal segments. So I do want to do some shout outs first. We have 2 podcasts on this awesome, amazing episode. So I feel it's only fair to give us both a chance to give some shout outs to some people that we appreciate. So I'm going to let you guys, if you have anybody that you would like to show some support to, I would like to give you the floor to do so.
Yeah. So Beyond the Shadows podcast, they are fantastic.
They are awesome.
So we've been really over the last few weeks getting to know them, and they're awesome.
And really, we're on Apple because of them.
Yeah, like, they really helped us get there.
Yeah. Oh, they're being awesome.
I don't know that I've heard their stuff before. Is it paranormal?
Oh, check them out.
I'm sorry.
Is it paranormal in nature?
So they kind of do a little bit of everything. Like they just did the Valenza Axe Murders was their latest episode that they just did. But they're awesome.
Yeah,
I'll have to check them out.
Yeah. And then the other one, is, I don't know if you've heard of them or not, Amanda, but it would be One Nothing Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
She is amazing. She is like our soul sister.
Aww. You know, she speaks very highly of you guys too. If I didn't know better, I think you guys were in cahoots on something.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's awesome.
Oh, I love you guys so much. I so appreciate you guys. I really appreciate that. And I'm definitely checking out that podcast. Really great recommendation. I have a couple of my own I'd like to throw out there. Do you guys have any more? Sorry, I don't want to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
Okay, just making sure. My group is mostly the same people, but I try not to exaggerate when I say how supportive this community is, but it really is. And they're just really consistent. So I have to give them some shout outs. So I have Jane and Declan, who are over at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. They have one of the most unique shows. I love them so much. I don't know if you guys listen to them, but it's a mother and son podcast. And they do every episode, they each tell a story of something like either a murder or something like, you know, kind of unexplained. And then they come up with a drink recipe that matches the episode and they'll try it and tell you what they think of it. And it's the cutest. I just love their dynamic. They're really great.
Yeah, they are awesome.
You do? Yeah. I figured you'd listen to them. They're really amazing.
Yeah. They've got a great podcast too. They're amazing.
They do. And they have the recent episode about the Loch Ness Monster is a must hear. So everybody who's interested in that kind of the cryptic stuff, go check them out. They did a really good job of like separating fact from fiction on that one. So they did great. And then my friend Kevin over at Where the Weird Ones Are, his most recent episode is actually David, who I had on my show on episode 9 from Down the Rabbit Hole. They did a really great episode. They're two of the most like awesome people I've ever met. Really grateful to have them in my corner. So go check them out. Of course, Fair with the Conversation Cabin. She's been doing some live investigations in these caves, like right outside her home, that are super spooky and paranormal. She caught a lot of really good evidence, so go check that out. And then our friend Eddie, you know, I got to say some kind words to him. He's always the first one to listen to our episode, and he sends us emails of his thoughts and recommendations and notes. And I really appreciate your how involved you are with just keeping your support and keeping constant. I really appreciate you. We'll leave it at that. I could go on for days. And then lastly, our friend Stacy, she's been a fan of the show for a while, and I'm really pumped that she's been able to watch it grow because she's been there since pretty much the beginning. Thank you. I know when I make a Patreon, she's going to be the first subscriber. I'm really excited that she's like in my corner. So thank you guys for all that you do. Appreciate you all.
That's awesome.
There's some great peeps.
Yeah. Yes, it's an amazing community. It really is. It's phenomenal.
We'll be back after a quick break.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
Y'all
trying
already?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to get them on there.
We all artists, man. You feel me? We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kyle, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit.
Don't play
right
with
now.
This shit.
I gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
It's just so supportive, and everybody's there to assist and help, and it's a really loving environment. And I haven't really experienced a community quite like that before. So.
Yeah, us either. It's been phenomenal. It's great.
I love it. So before we get into the story, I just wanted to tell a really funny story to you guys of something that happened lately. Because it kind of ties into what we were talking about a minute ago about our flags, but it's just the ridiculousness that my life is. And I feel it's not fair to just keep it private. So I want to tell you guys about it. So okay. There's this guy that works at this gas station that I'm like kind of fond of. He's kind of cute. And we like no moves have been made, you know, nothing like that. We just like, you know, make eye contact. That's about it. The other day I was like, went going there to pick up like an order from him. And then our like fingers brushed, which is no big thing. But, you know, for a guy that you think is cute, it like made me shudder a little bit. And I don't know why, but I full on convulsed in front of this man. Like I look in his eyes. I'm like, oh, he's never going to talk to me again. But it was just so humiliating. And I was like, really, my body picked that moment to be like, ooh, have a seizure.
Oh my gosh.
So that's, yeah, it's funny. I mean, luckily he didn't seem too scarred by it. He seemed to just like shrug it off. But if somebody did that in my presence, like took a bag from me and then their whole body just violently shook, and I'd be like, you need some help?
Oh my god, that's
I thought that was kind of silly. I was like, you know, more ridiculous stuff happens for sure, but that was just, it was perfect timing and it was comical. And if you don't laugh, you cry. So
right, yeah, you know, my humor and things. So
yeah, I think though, seriously, I think that we look way more into it than they do. Like, I'm sure that he thought that it was cute.
Oh, maybe we'll see. I guess we'll see the next time I have to go there and make eye contact with him if he thought it was cute. And then I got really awkward by it, so I just like fled immediately after, which probably didn't help. I probably should have explained it, be like, "Sorry, I'm cold" or something. But no, I just ran away. So, you know, oh, kind of add to the level of mystery.
Oh man, I would make a joke out of it. I don't know. I would do something, get something. I'm trying to think of something cute to do. That way you can next time.
Like, and it would bring sold anti-seizure meds like at the grocery store. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's a great idea. Maybe get a pill bottle and make your own like prescription thing for it. And then put M&Ms in it.
And yeah. Be like, we need to keep these in case that ever happens again.
Yeah. Then it would break the ice too. And maybe, oh, we're onto something here. We're going to have to develop this idea.
That would be really funny. And I would try that in a heartbeat if it weren't for the 1% chance that he doesn't remember who I am and he sees me as some crazy woman that brings him a pill bottle full of M&Ms.
Oh my gosh.
But I like where your train of thought is going. I'm loving the support. It's reinvigorating my sense of I should get back out there and convulse again and see what happens.
Okay, we're making it
guys updated.
T-shirt.
Getting back out there
both again. Oh my god, you're so cute.
Oh gosh. Well, I don't know. I wanted to give us a little chuckle before we get into the gnarly. So,
so we just bring the energy up before we bring
right.
it back down.
Bring it up, bring it down. So let's get into it. I don't want to keep you guys for the whole entire day, but I did just want to let you hear about my ridiculousness. I will definitely keep you guys posted on how that develops too. So.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I need updates. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know I got you. So we have a kind of a serendipitous episode, only because episode 10 didn't really count as our animal death, thankfully. I'm not mad about that. I'm very happy about that. He did survive miraculously. But that means that episode 11 needs to be an animal death. And considering this amazing team we've assembled here with the Suspended Sentence podcast, I wanted to pick a story with some relevance to their forte. So as you heard, they have a really rich background in mental health. And this story delves a lot into that, as well as into an animal that they have a lot of experience with. So we have a really good one. And for the first time in my 11 episodes, I feel okay saying that about this, because we have one of those rare stories where the victim is not only perfectly fine with how they went out, but I personally don't really feel that bad for this person. There is more people that I feel worse for in this story. This is also probably the most well-known case that we've covered. So if you know anything about this story or you recognize the name halfway in, please continue to listen. We do dispel a lot of myths in this one. I did find really reliable sources of information that shattered a lot of like really commonly believed facts about this case. So as always, the content you're about to hear in this episode is highly disturbing. I do have witness audio at the end. I do have some pretty disgusting details. There's profanity, mentions of drugs and alcohol, mentions of addictions, possibly some themes of mental abuse situations. Heavy trigger warning on this. No kids. Okay. Our story. Are there kids? Get them out. Do you see kids? Yes. Just making sure. I don't want to be canceled. Our story today brings us back to April 29th of 1957, and we are starting in the small village of Mineola, which is nestled into Long Island in New York. This is a joyous day for two new parents whose names are Val Dexter and Carol Ann. With this day comes the arrival of their long-awaited son, Timothy William Dexter. Timothy is one of five children born to Val and Carol, and unlike any other little boy, he led a pretty normal, you know, young adult or young child life. He was pretty close to his family, seemed to start out on the right path. Everything looked okay. His passions do look a little different in the latter parts of his life. Thomas was a star. Why on earth? Sorry, one second. I'm getting zingy dings from things. Bear with me while I close out. No, I don't want to get... Always techie. Okay, we're back. Always pop-ups. I want to make noise on my recordings.
Right.
So Timothy, again, led a very pretty normal life in his early life. He was a star on his high school swim team at Conequah High. He also loved animals and spending time with his friends. At one point, he even took on an infant squirrel, raising and keeping him as a pet, and he named him Willie, which is really cute. Eventually, though, he enters his teens. Timothy begins getting involved with some not-so-great influences, his friends, and he starts becoming attracted more and more to this lifestyle of drinking and, you know, light drugs, smoking weed, stuff like that. Eventually, throughout his teenage years, Timothy will end up crashing the family car during a drinking binge. His relationship with his family pretty quickly disintegrates after that point. After a large number of successes with his school swim team, which is probably the only area of school he succeeded in, he was offered a full ride scholarship from Bradley University. And that's in Illinois, from what I could find. He nearly lost it when he only barely graduated due to his poor grades. And then it was in college that Timothy's personality quirks started to become more evident. So he started to adopt all these different personas and accents, and he would try to trick people into believing that he was from other countries or that he was adopted from like an Australian family. A bit bizarre, but go off. He also continued his long path with alcohol and pretty quickly fell really deeply into the party life, and he ultimately had his scholarship revoked and gets tossed out of college. He really didn't have anything to fall back on by that point. So he decides to move to California and he starts branching out into trying his luck with some small acting roles in various sitcoms. And then he throws himself into an audition for a character named Woody on Cheers. Do you guys ever watch Cheers?
Yes.
Do you remember the character Woody? He was like at the fifth episode or something.
Uh-huh.
Is that like a notable
and
character?
I don't watch TV, but I remember Cheers. Like, I used to love that. Really? I used to love that show.
Did Woody do a good job? I can't say that I've seen it.
Oh, yeah, you guys are probably too young. That's like a
I don't know about that. I'm 34, but.
Yeah, you might be too young.
Oh, snap. Okay, well, you look younger than you look then.
I'm much older than that. Yeah, no, it was a great show. Was he that guy? Was he Woody?
So he auditioned for Woody, but Woody Harrelson ended up stealing the role out from under him.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, which I can't say I really blame the show producers on that one, because like if I was making a movie and I was casting a character named Cinderella and then I had someone named Janet come in and someone named Cinderella come in, I'm probably hiring Cinderella. Like, you know, right. Seriously. Can't really blame them, but he was like, this really changed the trajectory of Timothy's life. He was devastated. He was so disappointed in not landing this role that he took even more of a dive. And in 1987, he legally changes his name from Timothy Dexter to Timothy Treadwell, which was a name that did exist within his mother's side of the family, but not really anything super like close to him. This is where a big chunk of our listeners are going to have that aha moment. Timothy Treadwell is a pretty well-known name. For those that have not heard of him, stop Googling. Let us tell you. He starts drinking and drinking and drinking more and more and more frequently. And he eventually moves to California. And as one does after living in California, he starts experimenting with more hardcore drugs and dabbling in some heroin and some meth. And his father, of whom I'm trying not to judge too harshly because I don't know the capacity of how much he tried to help or like intervene with this, but he pretty openly admitted to the media, like, yeah, he straight up spiraled. And was like, not, he didn't say it like that, but still, like, did you try to help him, dad? You know, like, this has been going on since he was a teenager. Like, what did you extend to him resource wise? Like, you know?
Yeah.
So this addiction of him continued to deepen until sometime in the late 1980s. Do you guys want to take a guess on what happened to this drug addict that could change his life forever?
Oh, a plethora of things.
Take a shot.
Somebody died.
Oh, really close. So he overdoses on heroin.
Yeah,
and he almost dies. Luckily for him, well, I take that back. I don't want to say luckily for him, because given the way he died, I think dying right then would have been pretty lucky, if I'm being honest, but way to go, paramedics. You know, guy tries to go without oxygen for like a couple minutes, but no, got to bring him back. So put a pin in that, listeners, because I do want your opinions once you hear how he actually goes. Like, which way would you prefer? So, guys, bring him back to life. You know, he's like,
what did he OD on? Do you know?
So I read a couple things. I know in that time he was really heavily engaged with both heroin and meth. Most of my resources indicated heroin was the overdose. Yeah,
overdose, wrong.
So you guys, obviously with you having a lot more experience with mental health and in general, like the human mind, is it a typical thing that you know of for people to kind of change their entire way of life following an overdose? Like, I don't mean just coming back and like being like, oh, damn, that was scary, but like actually like changing your whole life.
In my experience, the simple answer to that is no. Once somebody gets to the point where they're consuming so much drugs that they're overdosing, they're so far down the rabbit hole that without serious intervention, a big life change sadly is just not going to happen. Unless the correct resources are provided to them, correct resources being like immediately following intensive inpatient treatment, followed by intensive outpatient treatment, followed by, I mean, tons and tons of community support. Addiction is very, very difficult, and it's a lifelong commitment to getting over. So no, I mean, typically just, I don't want to say just, but overdosing is, it's not going to be enough to get somebody to stop.
I did expect that answer, only because I feel like if that were the case, we wouldn't have drug problems, because the majority of drug addicts do ultimately overdose at some point. So I was kind of anticipating that. But I think you'll be, well, maybe not surprised. You'll be able to shed some light on what happens to our guy following this overdose. Because he, as soon as he's out of this overdose, he's trying to be like, I want to live, you know, but it's hard and he can't stop thinking about drugs. And then one day one of his friends was like, you know what you should do now that you're consistently breathing every day? You should go to Alaska with me and watch some bears. And Timmy's like, well, I don't really have anything else to do. So off they go to Alaska to watch bears. The two take this little plane taxi, which I guess is like kind of hops you to the part of Alaska they were going to, because there's not a lot of airports and stuff there. And there's a lot of like land that doesn't have roads or anything to get to. So they take this little plane taxi to these plains. And he sees his first bear out there. Timothy does. And he like, it kind of charges at him and then stops and they make eye contact. And with that moment, with rolling green pastures and these beautiful idyllic mountains rising behind out of the smoke in the background, Timothy is in love. He suddenly realizes his purpose. And in that one single moment, he decides he wants to spend every moment of the rest of his life dedicating himself to grizzly bears, also known as brown bears for those listeners that we have outside of the US. He was actually quoted the day that he, you know, saw them as saying, I knew I found my calling in life and that my destiny was entwined with the bears, which, cool. You like bears, you know, doing a bit much, if I'm honest. Your destiny is entwined with a bear that you just met 5 seconds ago that looks at you like you're a honey baked ham. Like I'm just making sure this is our destiny here. Okay. Grab the twine. So he gets back from Cali from his trip to Alaska, and his eyes are like literal giant cartoon hearts with bears in them. Like, he's obsessed and he forgets all about drugs and alcohol. And he's like, fuck that lame shit. I got bears. You don't need that. So he starts planning his immediate trip back to Alaska. He's like, oh, I got to go back. He enjoyed it so much. He just wants to be there. Good for him. He's got a passion in life and it's not heroin. I love that for this guy.
Sure.
So Timothy Treadwell with this new mission. I know. I'm big on support early on, you know, before he makes these dumb decisions. Good for him. With this new mission in his life brings this cause that he kind of develops for himself. And this cause involves Timothy camping for months at a time in several different parks in Alaska, but most frequently would be Katmai National Park. Katmai is home to 3,000 of the 35,000 bears that exist in Alaska. So pretty good population, pretty good chunk per, you know, the size of the land mass that they're in. This park is also one of the most protected bear spaces in the world. And Timothy apparently would go there and get up close and personal and film them so that he could protect them.
What? And
this, yeah. That was his justification for doing this. He was protecting these bears. He was the only one out here protecting these bears from poachers, even though the land we were on is from poachers. Okay. I'm glad like, you guys get it. Because I read that and I'm like, okay, now we both know.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure what his true motivation at that time was, but that's what he was basically telling everybody, that he was, that his purpose was to protect these bears in these parks and let him live his dream, whatever. So Timothy's plan is to spend the whole summer in Alaska, starting in this area called Hallow Bay. And Hallow Bay is on the coast of Katmai. This is an area that Timothy quickly and affectionately renamed as Grizzly Sanctuary. He kind of comes up with his own like names for these locations. So this is Grizzly Sanctuary. And he would start out the first half of the summer in this sanctuary. And it's like these beautiful plains with like mountains in the background. It's all flat land. There's not much trees or anything. It's really, really pretty. I have like videos that he took there, and it looks like he's like in front of a green screen. Like, it's gorgeous. I get why the appeal. I don't get why you want to be so close to the bears, but I get the appeal of why you want to be there. It's a beautiful place.
Oh yeah. Everywhere that you look in Alaska is like a postcard. It's absolutely beautiful.
Have you guys been?
My son is currently up there working on fish boats right now. It's so, I mean, it's literally everywhere, every direction that you look. I mean, you could put your camera anywhere, and it's like a postcard. It's absolutely beautiful up there.
I'm so jealous. That sounds so beautiful. Congratulations to your son, dude. Oh my gosh.
Right. But only 6 months out of the year. There's no sun for 6 months out of the year also.
That's a valid point. That's a very valid point. Right. Well, he seemed to time it to where I'm not sure if their summer months are the same as like summer months down here. I would imagine, because we're not that far, but he would spend summers there, and it was like, it looked pretty, the temperature looked pretty decent. Like, he'd be out in like a light jacket and be looking okay. Mm-hmm. So it looked really nice. I was like, I'd camp out there if there were, you know, if I would like protect myself and not be around bears. It'd be a nice place to go. I get the appeal.
In a camper, Grizzly Sanctuary. Definitely not in a tent.
No, definitely not in a tent.
Like in a cabin, a nice cabin in the wilderness. Right. That sounds lovely.
Right. And like armed with things to protect yourself. Absolutely. We just sit outside and then go inside if something happens. I would, absolutely. Sounds beautiful. So he'd hang out there for the first half of the summer in this Grizzly Sanctuary. And then the second half of the summer, that would be when bears start gearing up to den down. So they would move to the salmon stream. And so he would pick a spot next to the salmon stream. And this area was in a more dense area of vegetation, and it was called Kaflia Bay. And it was right off of Kaflia Lake. And he called this area Grizzly Maze. So we have Grizzly Sanctuary, where he would spend the first half of his summers, and then he would move to Grizzly Maze, which was where he would spend the second half of the summer. Grizzly Maze was a weird spot to pick, even if you're like an obsessed bear lover. Grizzly Maze was just basically a conglomerate of intersecting trails that bears use like frequently all day long. And it sat directly in the way of not only several trails, but the spawning stream was right beside it. And then like catty corner to it was a huge chunk of like berry bushes. So like bear heaven, like the chances of seeing a bear in this area are like guaranteed essentially. And then he would set up his tent at such an angle to these trails that the only way that a bear could get past his tent would be to either wade in the water behind him or walk directly in front of the tent door. So he'd set it up in such a way that a bear had to walk past in order to navigate the terrain. So I'm going to pause here again for a second, because you guys are pretty bear aware, being that you live in grizzly country. I do know that Alaska salmon bears are a good bit different than the bears in the lower 48, but the safety measures are the same across the board for them. I did check. So can you just walk us through what your typical protocol for bear safety is when you're going out into bear country?
Well, avoid them. That's number one.
Do not set your
my water.
Well, and it's confusing straight out of the gate that, you know, initially he said that he was there to protect them, but then he intentionally encroaches on their habitat directly in their path so that they have to interact with him.
Yeah, infiltrating their like safe space.
That is absolutely not protecting an animal at all. But so bears, you know this. I mean, everybody, if you've heard our podcast, knows this. Bears scare the shit out of me. They scare me. I've seen what they can do. Typically, you know, I mean, bears are not ferocious. They're not like mean or they're not going to, you know, see a person and run and try and attack them. We're not on their food chain. We pose no threat to them. They are not intimidated by us by any stretch of the imagination, but
they're territorial.
Right.
And what he was doing was absolutely playing with fire, in my opinion.
Things like their dens, things like their children, things like that. Like
their cubs, yeah.
They're going to have a problem with you being near.
Absolutely. They do have like a critical space area, and I don't know how it works in Alaska because there's obviously more of a population of bears there than there is here in Wyoming, even though we have a lot of bears here. The square miles of territory for a male bear, I don't know if you know this or not, Amanda, is 66 square miles.
Oh my gosh. I knew it was up there, but wow. That's more higher than I expected. I would have guessed around 40.
Yeah, no, that's their area. I mean, it varies pretty greatly depending on, you know, the area. I mean, Wyoming might be different than, well, it will be different than Alaska. But for me, for females, it's like 15 square miles. Wow. So one male bear will service, for lack of a better word, you know, multiple females. But males are generally more aggressive or territorial than females are, with the exception of when a female has her cubs. Then,
yeah, we learned that on the last episode.
Right. Male bears will actually even kill cubs to get them out of the way so that they can mate with a female or for hunger reasons, whatever. But anyway, so we have more black bears here than we have grizzly bears. And black bears are definitely, they're smaller. They're more skittish of people. They'll run away unless they're forced, you know, backed into a corner, generally speaking. But if you heard one of our episodes, I came face to face with a black bear and that mama was not backing down to me. She was going to kill me.
Oh my gosh. It's so scary. You guys are so lucky to be safe. I'm so happy that you are, but like how scary.
It's terrifying. It's so scary. But grizzly bears, opposed to black bears, grizzly bears, like you just described in Alaska, they live in really open areas, you know, like rocky lands or areas with little trees or no trees that are open so that they can see for long distances. They don't eat humans. They don't see us as a threat. But they have an amazing sense of smell, and they know when a human is there, obviously, right? They prefer to eat, like you said, like fruits, grasses, and salmon. That's their favorite.
Oh, yeah.
They're not very tall. They're only like 3.5 feet tall, but they weigh up to 1,300 pounds. And they can run faster than most dogs can. They can run up to 35, 40 miles an hour.
Yeah, they're explosively fast. I learned that in some videos where they go from a stand to a full run in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, they can do 100 yards in less than 7 seconds.
Yeah, it's crazy, which is why bear spray is super important too sometimes when you're out there, not, you know, for people who are in areas that you can't have firearms and stuff. Bear spray is that a really good deterrent, even if you do have a firearm. I love bear spray.
Right. I've never experimented with bear spray. I've heard though that it's amazing, but it's not like, you know, some people, have you seen the ads that come out from Game and Fish places that are like, bear spray is not used like bug spray. You do not spray it on your person. You spray it at the bear. Oh my
gosh. I have heard that. And I can only assume that they had to put that out because some idiot went down like spraying their kids with bear spray or something.
Probably multiple idiots. Yeah. But your question was, you know, like what to do if you run into a bear? Was that your question?
So just more or less, what do you guys, when you're going out into bear country, how do you prepare for that? Like, do you bring food? How do you accommodate for that since they have such that incredible sense of smell? I mean, mm-hmm. Are you guys packing bear-proof containers? Are you, you know, I know avoidance is your key, but like, what do you do in terms of prevention along with avoiding them?
Yes, absolutely. So if you take food up, you keep your area very, very clean. If you're camping out, you never, ever, ever have food in your tent.
Yeah, you or hang around from the you. Trees.
You either hang it from the trees, you burn or you lock up, you know, like tightly dispose of anything that has food remnants or anything on it. And you put it, you know, either in your vehicle or, you know, if you don't have that, you know, Ziploc bags, smell proof bags, things like that. You keep the area very, very, very clean.
And away from your tent.
And away from your tent.
That is excellent advice. And I'm so glad to hear all of those details because not only is that exactly what I was looking for, But this is where I'm excited that the story is going to surprise you just a little bit. Because Timothy, he does go out on these summer long trips to Katmai, but he does 90% of the things that you just stated that you guys do. He does this correctly. Like, he doesn't eat or cook in his campsite. He keeps it impeccably clean. He keeps his food in bear-proof packaging. He was great at avoiding odors. He was great at, you know, understanding bear behavior and what was aggressive and what was just, you know, kind of tolerance. I was actually impressed at how bear aware he was while also being completely fucking blind, like all at the same time. I was taken back by that. I was like, wait, this guy, like, he's got a screw loose for sure, but he wasn't a dumb guy. Like, he knew the steps to take to minimize interactions with bears. And he would do them on everything except for when it came to putting his body next to them.
Right.
Just baffled me. I'm like, it makes no sense. But I guess, you know, he made bad choices for sure. But he did make some good choices, which I was really impressed about. But he spends this whole first summer alone in Katmai videotaping and taking still photographs of these bears. And he does stuff right at the beginning. He has an electric fence set around his campsite. He has bear spray with him, you know, his bear-proof containers for everything. He picked the best time of year to come, which is, I'm sure you guys are well aware of why the salmon run is the best time of the year to go see bears. Yeah. But it's mostly because they don't give a shit about people. They're feasting on salmon that they can catch easily and expend minimal energy. And half the time they're eating like the eyes and the guts and then throwing away the rest. Like food is so accessible at that time of the year. They already don't look at people as a prey source, as you said, but especially when they have a buffet in front of them, they're not going to look twice at the, you know, half eaten chicken wing that's standing a few yards away.
Right. And that takes like very minimal energy, as it would take a ton of energy to attack and eat a human.
Right.
Exactly. So he did time it. He timed it right too, with coming out at the right time. So not only is everyone at this point, you know, he comes back from this trip and everyone's like, oh my God, he's alive. You know, but Timothy's like sad to be back. He hates the city. He hates being around other people and traffic. And I relate to this like hard, because as I mentioned to you before we started, like I hate being like stuck in concrete jungles. Like I like being in nature, being in trees, being in mountains, being at the beach, you know, being somewhere where there's nature. I don't like being in groups of people. It gives me really bad anxiety. So I relate to how he felt with that. I don't, you know, I didn't go set up a tent in Alaska, but apples to oranges, I know. So he makes his way back to California following this trip, and he starts immediately planning the next trip. And the next summer he does this 13 years in a row in all, going out and doing this nearly the same thing. He did stay at a couple different parks at first, but then Katmai would basically be his favorite, and he would repeat the same, you know, doing the first half and then doing the second half at the Grizzly Maze. He would kind of just keep that as his protocol, if you would. Throughout these 13 years of going out and spending these summers with the bear, he would record over 100 hours of video footage, thousands upon thousands of photographs, tons of dollars that he spent on sea taxis, because those aren't cheap to take you there and back. But, you know, eventually throughout the years of seeing the same bears, he started getting pretty comfortable with the ones that he would see year after year. And then he stepped it up a notch and he would start approaching them and even attempting and sometimes succeeding to pet them.
Yeah. Whoa.
Fucking grizzly bears in the wild.
Whoa.
So he starts getting way too comfy. And a couple years in, he stops bringing the electric fence that he would set up around his campsite, which was fucking stupid. And then a few years after that, he meets this girl and he's seen her for a little while. I don't know why the heck she agreed to this, but she decided to come along. And like for a couple summers, he would have different women he was seeing that wanted to remain anonymous. So I'll honor that. But they would come in and out for a couple weeks and stay with him at his tent. And he was like, he would go out and tell everybody that like being the bear guy was getting him the most like poontang of like his life. He's like, everybody loves a guy who touches bears.
Right.
I can't relate. Right. And he was like, he wasn't a horrible looking guy, but I mean, he's nothing that I would jump at, let alone if he's like, by the way, I go pet bears in my summers in Alaska. I'm not jumping for that. I don't know what's wrong with these people.
Now, I do know a guy who fought a black bear, and actually, like, with his hands, he got, like, had a bear encounter and had to actually fight the bear and had to stab it with a knife. And
oh, gosh.
When he was telling this story, Amanda, seriously, he was the sexiest person I've ever talked to.
Like, but yeah, that's different. Like, you know, it's like hand-to-hand combat. You know, you're defending yourself. This guy is, like, right. Going up, going like, yeah, kitty, kitty, to some bears. Like,
I know, but can you imagine? I bet he had some like grand story to tell or something.
Oh, I see what you mean, of like how he would kind of like reel him in.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Because I mean, most girls, like you just said, we would be like, you're crazy. Unless he had some fantastic story.
No, he probably painted a nice picture of how he was defending the bears against these poachers. And he had the heads of 41 poachers propped up on their swords on the shores of Katmai.
Surrounding his tent.
Instead of the electric fence, he used the heads of people that he saved them from something.
He's using their finger bones to make Blair Witch crosses and hang them
Yep. Okay. Yeah, he's pretty hot. I see the appeal.
Give me his phone number. He's dead, you say?
Oh, that's so upsetting. He was the love of my life.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. You guys are hysterical. Oh. Yeah, so he starts getting stupid and starts, you know, stops bringing his electric fence and starts bringing these women. They break up. She stops coming, whatever. He keeps going. And then he has an interaction with a bear at some point that was not particularly positive. So I read a couple different accounts of this because I'm sure the more he told it, the more he exaggerated it. So it's probably why they vary so widely. But a bear was apparently charging him and like not backing down. And he was trying to be like, and, you know, wave his arms around and it wasn't doing anything. So he sprayed the bear. And she backed off, but he immediately felt so bad because he was so in tune with her that he could feel her pain, recognize her suffrage, and like felt so bad for having harmed this bear that he swore off bear spray forever. So then he starts doing his summers in the middle of a bear party without electric fences or bear spray or any protection at all. A leather jacket, like nothing. He still kept this campsite tidy and kept up with like the food storage and the scent coverage. But he abandoned all of his defense protocols and just getting dumber and dumber and dumber.
Wow. I had
thoughts on that. I'm like,
what was his reasoning for that?
For abandoning the bear spray?
Yeah, like all of it.
Because he sprayed a bear and he just felt so bad. He's like, the pain that he caused this bear was so overwhelming for him. He couldn't do it. He just didn't want to put another bear through that again. And he would rather deal with them hand to hand than ever spray a bear and cause that kind of suffrage.
Oh.
Like, yeah, it sucks getting sprayed by a bear. You know, it also sucks getting chewed on one, you know?
Right.
Getting chewed on by one.
It's too, like, the whole, like, I got all big. I did all of that. Well, and that's what you do for black bears. That's for grizzly bears, you, like, roll into a ball. Let's just.
Yeah, you play dead.
And you don't make eye contact. You're not supposed to make eye contact with grizzly bears because that's a sign of aggression.
And you're not supposed to yell or.
Those are Timothy all didn't know any of this, apparently.
Right. Yeah, so.
Unless so a couple he was more years acting like a bear, was he like taking on the
essence of a bear?
I'm so excited that you said that. It's a great segue into this next part.
Okay. Perfect.
So at some point, a couple years into doing these summers, Timothy writes this book called Among Grizzlies Living with Wild Bears in Alaska. And it is available. Parts of it are available for download for free online. I did browse parts of them to verify facts throughout the story. But the full book is, you can purchase it. It's on Amazon. The book was built around the premise of his organization that he starts around the same time. And it's a foundation called Grizzly People. And it was started by Timothy and a woman named Jewel Palavac. And Jewel is seldom credited, as is typical for women, for her work, both in the creation of his foundation and she co-wrote his book with him. But she's never mentioned. It's always he did these things. Jewel helped. She was an integral part. And I'm sure this dude didn't do all the grunt work on his own. Jewel was an old coworker of Timothy's, and he was a roommate with her for like 20 years. They worked really well together on a few things. I'm not sure why she's not ever mentioned for her work. But I wanted to make sure that I pointed out that she is here because she was an integral part in both the foundation and the writing of his book. She needs her props. Props.
Yeah, girl. I love that you just did that. Absolutely.
Hell yeah. We women positive around here, Jewel.
Yeah, very absolutely. Much so.
So once this foundation was started, Timothy started starring in these videos that he would take of the bears. So it wasn't just him behind the camera filming him. He was like setting them up on a tripod, filming himself, like getting closer to the bears, touching them, playing with their cubs, really violating their personal space to a huge degree. And not all of these bears are thrilled to his presence, but it did seem through the years, like I will say, it did seem like he built some kind of, I don't want to say a relationship because he did not bond with these bears. domesticate them. He didn't even train them. But for some reason, these bears would tolerate him more the more that they like saw him. And mother bears would literally like walk up and allow their cubs to play near and with Timothy. And they were completely relaxed and content, which is like very, as you know, out of character for a sow. But his premise was still that he was just protecting these bears. This was all necessary, you know, for his ability to protect them. I mean, he's just showing people how sweet and cuddly bears are, right? Like, how could that ever get anybody hurt?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Not the years that he'd been out there to let them tolerate him.
Right. Yeah. Hang out long enough and see. They say
hang out for about 13 summers and then you'll be fine.
Right.
In their space, in their home, in their area.
Yeah, I don't. And it's like completely remote too. There's like, he had like no supplies. He would be out there with the bugs with sheer, you know, some nights he wouldn't even sleep because he'd be gripping onto his tent to keep it from blowing away in these huge storms and stuff. Like he would weather through all this stuff, not being able to eat, hunting off the land. But he did it because it was part of the experience and he like thrived off of it. But he would always like every time the plane would come pick him up at the end of the summers, he was all sunburnt and his hair was all bleached white and he's all scrawny and stuff because he hadn't eaten. Like, why is that? Why do you enjoy doing that to yourself?
Yeah. Oh, bizarre.
All to touch some bears. I don't know. But a lot of people immediately disagreed with his methods, and obviously for good reason. But members of the National Park Service and the Alaska Science Center specifically were like, oh, what the fuck is this guy doing? So this ecologist named Tom Smith, he made a statement of Timothy that said, he is breaking every park rule that there was in terms of distance to the bears, harassing wildlife, interfering with natural processes, and he has been warned repeatedly. Timothy, this is where this segue comes to play. Timothy even develops a habit of acting like a bear when park staff come around or when tourism companies would bring like vans of tourists to Katmai to watch the bears. Lots of witnesses would report that Timothy would hide behind bushes, making aggressive eye contact, sometimes springing out and cursing and lashing out aggressively. Other times he would flee the area, essentially running away. So like, you mean to tell me you guys don't do that when people approach you when you're out hiking?
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, I, sorry, I can't think of it. Can you imagine you paid like $4,000 to go out to Alaska and watch some bears and there's a man out there in the middle of nowhere running around with minimal clothing acting like a bear? He would even strip naked and dive into the water and then pop up next to the seaplanes to scare the planes off into thinking he was like some like swamp monster or something.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I cannot.
Did he have a mental breakdown or something after his OD?
So I didn't really see like one individual breakdown, but it does look like ever since like in college, he was acting real weird with like acting like he was from another country or like taking on different accents and pretending to be adopted and stuff. So I think it was like maybe he had some mental health issues that were exaggerated by his drugs. And then this is what resulted from that. I don't know.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like it, doesn't it?
That's my guess. I really couldn't find like – I couldn't find any – diagnosed like mental health issue. I have to imagine there's something, but I couldn't find anything.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting.
He is exactly the reason that there are rules put in place for parks saying that nobody can camp for longer than 72 hours.
Yeah. Yes, and they had that rule then as well when he would do this. They made him every 5 days you have to move your campsite a mile so that you can keep up with bears who are like tracking your odors and stuff.
But he would do that, or he would stay in the same spot.
He would never do that. He would hang out for weeks at a time in one spot and then move to another for weeks at a time. And sometimes park services would come and tell him he's got to move and he would move. And then as soon as they left, he'd come back. And like, it was constant butting heads with like national, like park service staff and like Katmai park service staff. And it's just, they didn't like dislike the guy, but they're like, this guy's just problematic. Like he's just doing things that are not in favor of the bears. And then he's causing all this tourism industry that relies on these bears to suffer because people are not as privy to spend a lot of money to go see bears when there's naked men running around amongst them. Or maybe they're more privy, actually. I don't know.
Yeah, and like the park rangers are probably like, okay, eventually his luck's going to run out.
Yeah.
Park rangers deal with these animals every day.
Right.
Like,
Absolutely. And they live by this rule. And there's, and this I found really interesting because I hadn't known about this before I really did this dive into this. But there's this rule among like bear biologists called the 25th bear. And when they mean the 25th bear, it's because statistically one in 25 bears will act aggressively towards a person. So you can have 24 interactions with a bear that go smooth and without incident, but that 25th bear is the one that you right. have to be prepared for. So he probably hung out with far more than 25. So he was well above his luck threshold, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's completely pretty much making an enemy out of anybody who goes there to like give a shit. And acts out towards anybody. Like, I'm pretty sure NPS and Katmai both also care about the bears that they're, you know, taking care of and protecting. But according to Timothy, the only reason they existed was to cause him pain and suffrage. And I actually found one. It was like a 4 or 5 minute video. And it started with Timothy doing multiple takes of this scene of trying to come out and explain about this bear that he was looking for. And like 2 minutes into it, he actually does the take once. And then he like turns around, gets back in his acting mode, and then does the take a second time. And then randomly in the middle of the second take, he just starts going off, and it's 4 minutes of him cussing and screaming about park staff and how they can, you know, you know what they can do to him, and yelling at the camera about him being the only protection the bears have. And it was really telling of his mental stability. And it was also hysterical. I got to say, I don't have the link. It's on Reddit somewhere. It's really funny. You can easily find it if you just find like Timothy Treadwell, like freaks out or something. But it is, it's him just going off for minutes at a time. And he's like naming individual names that some of them are blurred, you know, for privacy. But it's just hysterical. He's just going off about the National Park Service. And he's like, fuck you, National Park Service. Fuck you, over and over again. Like,
Jesus. Holy crap.
So entertaining. The next big chapter of our boy's life here starts in 1996, and this is when Timothy's hanging out in Colorado, and he would do this from time to time during the off season when he was not in Alaska. Colorado does boast some of the best locations for hiking and like exploring nature in general, so he'd escape out east for a little while, and he even hold lectures about his experiences with the bears. And one of these lectures, he bumps into Amy Huguenard, and I really tried to make sure that I said that right. There are like 8 different pronunciations for that in audio format. I'm really sorry if I butchered that, if her family ever listens. Amy was born in Buffalo, New York, and she was born on October 23rd of 1965. And at the time of her meeting Timothy, she was working as a physician's assistant. And boy, was she a looker. She was lean. She had a nice womanly shape. You know, she was very pretty, very petite. She was like 100 pounds and 5 feet tall, which is embarrassing as shit because I'm 5 feet tall and I'm not 100 pounds. But she had attended his lecture and was enthralled. Like from the moment she heard him speak, she's like, oh God, this man is special. And before long, she actually sends him a letter. She's like, dear Timothy, I was in your lecture, da da da. And little by little, they start to form a little friendship. And then little by little, you know, over the course of time, things kind of develop more intimate. She was really shy at first, but like after her and Tim kind of realized the chemistry they had, she came out of her shell, was really comfortable around him. They'd talk for hours when they were by themselves, and then like they'd come around another person and she would clam up and just not speak, like very shy. But of course, you know, this flirting turns into a relationship, and it was really hard on Amy because the first couple years, you know, Timothy would leave for Alaska and be gone all summer, and she like would miss him months at a time that your significant other is away. So she did that a couple years, and then she's like, you know, I can no longer endure his absence. Like, this just stinks too much having to be away from him. So she makes the decision in the year 2000, to spend her first summer in Katmai with Timothy. She's like, I'm going to go with you. She's not as confident around the bears as Timothy, but she does have like a trust in him and his, you know, capabilities. What's more about Amy, though, is I actually read from like a family member of hers that she had a tendency of making really bad decisions when she was like swept up in the throes of her relationships. And she kind of had like a track record of making some bad calls when she was with some guys. So blinded by love for sure. But even so, you know, she swallows her fear and she slept alongside Timothy in this covered camp that he would set up in the grizzly sanctuary and the grizzly maze. And she does that the first summer, and it's a little bit alleviating because they make it out alive. She sees the way he is. She's like, obviously he knows a thing or two about them because he's still alive. He's been doing this a while. So she's kind of rationalizing it to herself that like, this is safe to do. The next year, 2001, that's the year that this guy's media popularity really starts to take off. So he had been collecting some pretty good donations in his foundation's name that were helping to fund these summers in Katmai, but he was becoming a bit of a household name at this time. He's being interviewed by magazines, and he's on television shows, and he's disgusting, proclaiming himself to be an environmental activist and appearing on the Discovery Channel. He even did a segment on The Late Show with David Letterman, and he did a segment on Dateline NBC and then a bunch of other media outlets as well. But those were the most notorious. It seemed he had like the fame and the media recognition that he really wanted for so long, which makes sense because if you watch any of like the first video, the early videos seem to be just him filming bears, but you can really clearly tell a difference. Like the later videos, it's not authentic. It's just him. He's acting, you know, he's like putting on a show. And I think that's driving him to kind of like get closer, you know, like the shock value behind it. But he very much is acting. He's definitely goes back and forth between his authentic person, like personality, and then this acting one that he does on film. So he would act out a scene 4 to 5 times and go through and like pick his favorite, what looked the best, what, you know, how the bear looked in the background the best. Very much a method actor. I do wonder how much the notoriety he received from doing this motivated him to continue coming out there. Like, I wonder if he went out the first time and nobody said anything, would he have kept doing it? Like, I wonder, you know?
Right.
So both
and when you're in the public eye like that, the more you give, the more you have to give. Like, it has to keep escalating for you to be relevant.
Oh, absolutely. Like these content creators nowadays, like you get stagnant and you get old and you have to keep stuff fresh to continue like trending and being talked about. Yeah, for sure.
Right. And I don't know, maybe you're going to mention this, but I do have a question about when she started going up there and staying the entire summer with him, did he increase the safety features? Like at that point, did he put up the electric fence? Like, no. Was he concerned about her safety and her comfort at all? Or did it just continue the way
he had been doing it?
So yeah, that's a big part of why I feel the way I do about this guy. He did not increase any safety provisions. He did have a satellite phone. So like, technically whenever she needed to leave or wanted to leave, he could have called and arranged for a plane to come the next morning and she would have been out of there. But in terms of like at that moment, defense protocols, he had none. He didn't have his fence. He didn't have spray. He didn't have a firearm. She didn't have any of those either, which is really disappointing. You know, like do whatever if you want to risk yourself. But like, you know what these bears are capable of, obviously, because of the protocols that you practice when you're by yourself. So why would you bring somebody into that and then not give them the ability to protect themselves, you know?
Right.
Very disturbing. Exactly.
Very disturbing.
Both? Yes, very. Boyfriend of the year, might I add. Just...
Right. Well, human being of the year, because like you just said, if you want to be reckless with your own life, do you, but when you're responsible for somebody else's life, that's there because of you, you have a heightened sense of responsibility for their life as well. Right.
100%. 100%. I agree. Yeah. Kind of.
So that was super reckless.
Very reckless. Yeah. Reckless with somebody else's life. That's like, you know, how I feel about drunk drivers. Like, you know, you want to go kill yourself, do the thing, but don't take out a family with you. That's just driving along, minding their business, coming home from church or whatever, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. But both Tim and Amy, they keep diaries throughout this time. And Tim's entries are, you know, they're all very pro look at me, you know, like ecstatic about his interactions with the bears, things that were happening with his filming, things that were standing out to him, things he wanted to do the next day. Amy, not so much. Her entries were for indicating she was pretty freaked out about the bears. She was nervous about them. She didn't feel comfortable around them. Bears were approaching her very closely. Like there's a video where a mom and her cubs come within 10 feet of Amy and Timothy's a few feet away filming. And Amy's like the look on her face, you could tell she's like frozen in fear. And Timothy's just talking away, filming her, not doing a thing. And she stays super still. And luckily, it ended without incident. But you can tell the look in her face, like that girl was scared to death. And Timothy, what? How are you going to protect her, you know?
Right.
So like, it's not like you can be like, oh, don't worry. He's right there. He's got the gun or the bear spray. Like, you have nothing. If something happens, what the fuck are you going to do about it? Nothing.
Right. He's holding a camera.
Exactly. He'll film it.
Yeah. He's using this as an opportunity to get clout, not to protect you.
Very much so. So she's really not enjoying, like she is enjoying her time in Katmai, but just not as much as him. Like it's beautiful, but when you're forced to camp like on top of a bear's butthole, basically, I can see that it's a little unnerving. Like it would be nerve wracking.
Right. Right. And where's yeah. the food? Like, where's my taco? Like seriously,
hungry. Like a real cup of coffee.
Right. Anything, any luxury, clean clothes, like a shower. Poor girl goes without for what? I don't know. This guy is not worth all that, girl, but okay.
No guy is.
No. So another couple years after that, 2003, it is their third year going out for a summer with the Bears, and they do the same routine. They fly in, you know, they start their first half in the Grizzly Sanctuary. Everything's good. A few weeks in, Amy leaves and goes back to California. And here I saw a lot of conflicting info about why. Some reports said that her and Timothy had an argument and she left. Some said that she had to return for something work related. I really couldn't find the answer that had the most like logic behind it or fact behind it. So I'm not going to pretend to know, but she leaves and Timothy sends her with some written correspondence for her to take to his associates in California, which is where they live at this point in Malibu. And so he calmly mentions in this letter that he sends with the associates, like how everything's going good. I got my camp set up. Fish are looking good. Bears are a little more aggressive than usual this year, though. You know, no big. So a few weeks later, Timothy's moving his camp, you know, to Kaflia Bay, as he does for the second half of the summer, to go to Grizzly Maze for the salmon run. So Amy arranges for a flight back, and she is aware of this claim that the Bears are acting a little sillier than usual, but he, as usual, sticks his camp in the same spot, dead in the center of the intersecting trails. And he, again, has no electric fence, no bear spray, no fire. Firearms are illegal in Katmai, actually, but either way, no protection. Amy flies back, and she's like, oh, cool, we're at this spot now, great. You know, but for whatever reason, despite being uncomfortable with it, she continues to stay. So I'm taking a lot of pauses throughout here, but you guys have a lot to offer in terms of insight to this. So I want to pause again. I want to know the reason behind the mental gymnastics that our girl was doing to try to rationalize staying. Like, can you shed some light on why the frick anyone, given everything, bears are more aggressive, you know, for whatever reason you just left and you return, come back and you decide to stay. Can you shed any light on what would make the human mind convince someone to want to do that?
Well, I mean, the simple answer is that she loved him and she wanted to be with him. And that, I mean, it almost sounds like, and I'm not a doctor, I'm not diagnosing anybody, I'm not, you know, I'm not doing that. But I mean, there's some, being in the mental health field, there's some things that are, I mean, like red flag, red flag, red flag. Like if he didn't have a narcissistic personality disorder, I would be shocked.
First I would feel the same. I have the same feeling. That's funny that you said that.
the things that you're saying in here, like, is almost like verbatim what would meet that criteria for that. And so going on the assumption that he had that, how that would reflect to her would almost be symbolic or in line with like a trauma bond. Like if I'm not there, somebody else will be. If I'm, yeah, I mean, we don't know the private conversations that they had, but the fear that she had in, you know, that was shown in the videos would signify that she didn't want to be there for the Bears. She wanted to be there. Either she wanted to be there or he made her feel as though she had to be there.
That's an excellent observation. That is an excellent observation. Yeah. She did not want to be there for the Bears whatsoever. And that's clearly indicated by how she reacted anytime they would approach her. Like, she liked them, like, right. They're cool, but they, you know, like normal people like you and I, they scared her. So it makes sense that it's really sad that she loved him that much and he didn't love her enough to even provide her with some basic protection.
Right. Even an electric fence. Like, he did not, his level of empathy and compassion for her was absolutely non-existent, in my opinion, because that's not how you care for people or protect people. He was more focused on what he wanted, selfishness, right?
Of course. Yeah. Content.
And this grandiosity of self. And I mean, he had, I don't know, absolutely no care for her whatsoever. He did not protect her.
Well, and if he didn't want to carry bear spray, that's fine. But he should have had it there for her to use or for her to feel more comfortable.
She absolutely. Right. He should have given her some way to defend herself, especially with her. I mean, she's 5 feet tall and 100 pounds. Right. She's like a shrimp cocktail for a bear. You know, like, that would take next to nothing.
Right. Right. Gosh. So I don't know that, I mean, why she went back. I don't know that she... It's almost like,
unless she knew, like, you know, you'd said earlier that he had other women go in the past, and like,
right,
like Tracy was saying, maybe she felt like, maybe she knew that she was just
Oh, when she was like, oh, what if another girl comes out with him or something?
Right. That she felt like she could be replaced if she wasn't doing what he wanted her to do.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see, I mean, to watch some of the videos of like their interaction to be able to see that, because it just, it feels like this whole story, the way that, that we're hearing it is more like he is inferior and she does what he tells her to do. It seems very, very much like trauma bond, dictatorship kind of, like she didn't have a choice. Like if she wanted to keep him and she wanted to,
that was his lifestyle. So
you either be a part of this or get to getting.
Wow.
I don't know though. I mean, that's an assumption. I'm not.
Well, it is backed up by, you know, she has a history of kind of making these reckless decisions when she's in relationships. So she must, you know, I don't want to, gosh, I can't think of the right terminology because I don't want to make her come off as like weak, because she was not in any way. It took major guts to do what she did. But like, just maybe around men, you know, she just didn't, she loved men so much that she disregarded herself over it. And that's what led her into making these kind of decisions. I couldn't find any other examples of other decisions that she's made. But, you know, she had family members who were like, yeah, she has a history of kind of doing dumb shit when she gets with guys. So it is sad that she does have that personality where she's easily overrun, you know, by men, by these narcissistic behaviors.
Right. Because that's exactly what it is. I mean, it's not. Or that she loved in a way that put her in a position, in a great position to become a victim of narcissistic men.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Good people really are taken advantage of a lot because we don't see things the way that other people see them. Right.
If you love fiercely, if you're somebody that loves really fiercely and you're a great victim, you're a great person to
be victimized.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, that is a good portion too, though. Even women in domestic situations that, you know, tell friends what they're going through and they're encouraged to leave, but they don't. They want to in the moment, but then they go back and they make excuses for their partner and they, you know, they're easily manipulated, so they think it's their fault. So yeah, that maybe she
just has their sense of loyalty to that person.
That too. Yeah, she definitely had loyalty. Well, and I think a lot of it too is, you know, if I knew the answer for why she left in the first place, it might shed some light. Because if it were work related, maybe she intended to be there the whole summer and she had to depart, you know, to go take care of that. And she planned to come back anyhow, which would make more sense. But it still wouldn't lend insight to why she was there in the first place, despite the fact that she was very uncomfortable around these bears and living amongst insects and flies and, you know, no clean, sterile water and having to boil your water every day and hunt for your food. Like that just doesn't seem like anything that I would want to do, that I would even do for, like, I love a lot of people, but it would take a lot to make me want to go do that for them. Like,
yeah. Right. Especially knowing that the bears were acting more aggressive that year and all the rest, like it just doesn't, there's definitely more to it. And like you said, it would be interesting to see why she left, to know factually why she left. And what the conversations were, whether or not she had plans of coming back or what their, you know, just what the conversations were.
Yeah. Well, she did leave journal entries too on a couple occasions that her and Timothy would argue mostly about the bears and about his kind of like disregard for safety. So she wrote quite a bit about that as well. So I'm interested. It's just, it could go so many different ways on why she would have left. But for whatever reason, she ends up coming back. She stays. They continue their summer. And as it closes in on the end of this beautiful summer that they have, you know, they have a great time. By the time that she comes back, he's moved to Grizzly Maze. And so they spend the rest of the time there. Everything goes fine. It closes in on the end of their summer and the end of their time. So Timothy makes these bizarre jokes several times to his friends and associates about, like, joking about, oh, maybe next year I'll be killed by a bear, or this might be my last year. Like, just, but they're like, okay, this guy's a weirdo. He does stuff like that. They don't really think anything of it. Like, he's not suicidal by any stretch, you know, but Amy's not amused. She's like, I do not, you know, so she considers leaving again. Like, she's like wanting to get out of Katmai, but she doesn't, but she does write in her diary that she, like, she wants to get back to Malibu. She thinks she wants to leave Timothy. So she was finally growing that courage to be like, I think that I'm done with this. Like, I think I'm done growing in this, you know? So
yeah.
I don't know if maybe he said that it was his last year to keep her on his hook, but he kind of says to a few people like, oh, this is my last year doing this, coming out here. So I don't know if maybe he was doing that because he realized he might lose Amy. He was just trying to be like, oh, look, I'll stop. I'm not sure. The reality is The end of their trip draws to a close. They pack up. The taxi plane comes, picks them up. They take off. They look behind them. They look bid farewell for what they think is the last time to Grizzly Maze and all the natural beauty that surrounds it. And I'm sure that many people are confused now because they're like, wait, your stories end in death. What happened? Just wait. Patience is a virtue.
There's more. Just wait.
So Timothy and Amy, they land in Kodiak, Alaska, which is where the taxi plane takes them. And that's on September 26, 2003. They land here so they can store their gear and put their equipment away for safekeeping. And then they head to the airport to catch this connecting flight that's going to take them home to Malibu. For whatever reason, Timothy ends up getting into this really loud public verbal altercation with an airline ticketer because he made some kind of alteration to the original travel plan and the price has now changed and there's an additional cost incurred and he doesn't like that. So he flips out about it in front of everyone and starts going off on this like random airline worker, super awkward for fucking Amy. For whatever reason, the mix-up causes him to be like, well, we'll just rebook a different flight. But there was some bad weather coming in and they were probably going to have to bat down there in the city for like a week to wait for it to pass so they could go. So Amy is like, well, let's just go to a hotel. Like, fuck it. We'll just go somewhere, you know. Of course, Timothy can't do that. Timothy's like, well, Amy looks to him and she says, and this is like what was actually said by some witness reported. So she looks at him and she's like, well, what do you want to do? And he looks at her and goes, you're going to think I'm crazy. And she's like, you want to go back to the Bears? And he's like, yeah, I do. So his reason behind this was not only that they had a week to kill, so why not go back to the campsite, but also because throughout his years of coming to Katmai, he had met this bear and he named her Dewey. And he had known Dewey since she was a little cub. And it's just kind of a cute story, I'm not going to lie. Little Dewey was a little cub when they met, and Dewey grew up around Timothy through the summers, and he would, you know, watch him kind of grow. And it's really hard to be a grizzly bear, you know, when a baby bear, especially because you get pummeled on by the bigger bears. So he'd watch as Dewey got like smacked around by bears and stuff. And there was a few times he almost like wanted to run out, intervene and like stop the fight because he was seeing Dewey get pummeled on by these bigger bears. She's like, okay, let him fight his own battles, bro. We didn't tag you in.
Okay, let him learn.
So he, really, really loves this bear. And for whatever reason, this whole summer, it might have been a girl bear now that I'm thinking about it. I think Dewey was a girl bear. And this whole summer, he doesn't see Dewey. And he's like really distraught over it. So he's sitting in the airport. And he's like, you know, we could go back. But not only that, but because all the bears are going to be batting down hibernating, we might have a better chance of seeing Dewey because we haven't seen her. So maybe the reason why is that she's being kept away from the river by the bigger bears. Maybe when the bigger bears are hibernating, she'll come out. So that was his like plan of like, he'll go try to find Dewey. So
I'm on the edge of my seat. I'm like, and then what?
I really wish that this had gone a different way because it's really like, I just, Amy, like, girl, you were so close. You were just so close to getting the hell out of this situation and getting away from him. But reluctantly, and for reasons that I will never understand, Amy agrees, and on September 29th, the two take a taxi plane back to Kaflia Bay, and they set the camp back up just the way they had it only a couple days before. So now they have this mission. You know, we have like 7 or 8 days here. We got to find Dewey. We're going to find this grizzly. We've seen her year after year. You haven't seen her all summer. We're worried. So, you know, they go out to look for her, and as luck would find it, he does find her, and he also comes across this very large male bear. And this bear was like significantly older. He wasn't like aggressive, but he was grumpy. And like he had seen this guy a couple times and tried to befriend him, but he never could. Like this bear really, he would just kind of grunt at him and like gruff, you know, he was just like, I don't really want anything to do with you. And he tried and tried, could never really get onto this bear's good side. But this, he was on the meager side, a little bit, you know, on the thinner side, but still relatively healthy. And he was older, significantly older than the other bears. Timothy spent a good deal of time actually filming him. As he was repeatedly diving into the water after a piece of dead salmon. Starving bear is never a good sign, listeners. Just going to say that now.
Yeah. Just like thinking about like how gross bears smell.
Just like if a bear's spending 20 minutes diving into a river for a small piece of dead salmon, like you should probably get out of there. Just a thought, but like he's probably hungry.
Yeah.
Leave mission.
Abort. But Timothy thought that's just what they did. He's like, that's just what bears do. Because remember, he was never there that late. He would leave, you know, in late September, like when he would leave middle of September. That time, like September, October, that's a really hard time for grizzlies in Alaska. And the reason for that is the salmon run is all but dried up. And all that's left is like, you know, after salmon spawn, they die anyway. So it's like rotting salmon carcasses and little bits that like, you know, are just barely edible. And then the weather's changing, getting colder. So all the fruits and berries are dying off. On top of that, competition from thousands of other bears who congregate in these little areas of food opportunities. So they're driving the aggression. And these bears who aren't as fit, they're like not able to get their fill. They're stuck getting pummeled out of the food areas. So all the nice bears that he's come to know all summer long, the nice ones that he's hung out with and spent time with, those are the bears that have been, you know, more successfully eating. They're bigger. They've been able to dominate those streams and those food sources better. They've filled up on their calories. They're in their den. They're sleeping. The bears that are hanging around now, they're all these new bears that have come into the area just exploring whatever's left, trying to find these little food opportunities before the winter, because there's, you know, bears hibernate over winter. They sometimes are eating 20,000 calories a day trying to prepare for this shift in their metabolism so they can go into a den and hibernate. There's no food over the winter. Alongside this mindset, he's like, you know, these are some newer bears, so I have to keep in mind that, you know, these bears aren't the ones that I really know super well. But he was still continuing to, you know, engage with them and get close to them and try to make new friends and stuff like that. So very, very weird. It is just a bizarre situation to put yourself in when, you know, it's a much different scene than the summertime. You there? Hello?
Hello.
Oh, God. I thought I lost you for a sec. Okay. I was like, wait, where'd you go?
That was weird. I was like, what happened? Technology is great.
Technology is great. Yeah. So, yeah. So these bears are really like shoveling their gullet full of food as much as they can in preparation for this kind of shift in the season. So there's this bear that he's filming, that one. We think it's the same bear. I say we, I mean like experts who have delved into this. They think it's the same bear that he filmed diving for that dead piece of salmon. But there's a bear that Timothy films, and he's like, this bear wasn't really acting aggressively, but he states in the video, he does not feel entirely comfortable around this bear. So it's about a week later. It's October 5th, 2003. Amy wants to get the fuck out of Katmai. She's like, I want to go. The bears that are in the area, they're getting closer. They're getting braver. They're getting bolder. And they're not the bears they're accustomed to during the summer. And they're beginning to notice the camp. More than once, Timothy has to get out of his sleeping bag and scare a bear away from the tent at night. So Timothy keeps his confidence up because they're like, we're in no harm. You know, I've got it in control. But she's scared. Like, she really is scared. And she leaves some journal entries about how she just wants to leave. Timothy, by the way, has in his possession a satellite phone and could at any time call the taxi plane to be there the next morning. He does not utilize that resource that whole last week, this whole time that Amy's like completely terrified. Maybe he convinced her since it was just like one more day to stick it out. You know, we don't know for sure. But Amy wakes up that day on October 5th and carries on her regular activities alongside Timothy. Timothy gets on his phone and he makes a couple calls. He makes his first call around noon that day, and it's to the plane taxi. And he's arranging the pickup the next morning at his camp. Then he makes another call to his associate in Malibu to let him know he's coming back. They speak happily, didn't hint at any issue whatsoever. He doesn't say anything about the bears. He said there's been no problems. All, you know, the two hang up the phone and they go on about their day. By this time, it's raining a little bit. He shoots another video of a bear, and then they're packing their gear so they can leave first thing in the morning. So the following day, October 6, 2003, the taxi plane is approaching, sees the coast of Katmai in the distance. Pilot looks at his phone. He's looking for a call that he usually receives from Timothy to confirm his arrival time. And he thinks nothing of it because he's like, oh, maybe he slept in or something. Continues on, heading to the shore to pick up an eager Amy and hopefully a smiling and boasting Timothy. Weirdly, the pilot doesn't see a single bear in sight upon approaching the shore, which is really abnormal. But, you know, he is here later. Who knows? The plane lands, slows to a stop. Pilot gets out, doesn't really see anyone. He cups his hands and he yells to Timothy the way he does every time that he arrives, but there's no one there. The tents are there. They're both set up the way they had them. They're a little collapsed, and there's some items strewn about. But there's no one around, and the very eerie silence. So the pilot of the plane starts walking around a little and begins to ascend the main trail that goes up past the tent, and it goes up a hill. And so he starts walking up, and about halfway up the hill, he stops, and he has this growing sense of uneasiness that's developing deep in his stomach. He turns back and he heads towards the plane. He's like, I'm not doing this. So only a short distance from the plane, he turns around to see a massive grizzly bear heading down the hill where the way he was headed, and it's coming his way quickly. So he books it back to the plane, cranks it, gets it in the air, and he starts circling the campsite area. And this here, listeners, is where it gets really gross. Just another warning, this is going to be really hard to hear. The pilot navigates the plane above the thick brush and the flattened tents in the campsite, and he finds the bear that he saw back on the other side of the hill, just over the trail, just where he was about to walk up to moments before. And the bear is sitting on a large pile of what looked like dirt at first and protecting it pretty wildly. The pilot, having his own knowledge on bears and what a bear cache is, which we'll talk about, he starts swooping the plane down lower and lower, trying to drive the bear off. And the bear doesn't leave, but he does move off a little bit, long enough for the pilot to realize what he's seeing. And what he's seeing, sticking out of a mound of dirt and leaves, is a human rib cage, gnawed to the bone.
Oh my God.
Among it, he can see small pieces of flesh decorating the surrounding area. And the bear refuses to leave, and the pilot has no choice but to veer off and call the Alaska State Troopers and report a bear mauling and potential fatality. And he asks them to assist. They arrive pretty quickly. The bear is still refusing to leave. He is guarding that cache. And unfortunately, they fire multiple rounds into it and they kill it. This poor bear. We're going to name him Bear 141. And officials begin assembling to search the area. So they immediately go to the pile of debris that the rib cage was noticed from the air. And that, unfortunately, it belonged to Amy. They also found her head and a few other pieces of small pieces of tissue. Her remains were partially buried, which is typical for predatory attacks from bears. They continue searching, wondering where Timothy is. He's like, he didn't leave this poor girl out here alone like this, like, you know. So they're searching, looking, and then they come across a smaller adolescent bear that's only 3 or 4 years old. And he's kind of nervous, but he like charges at officials a little, and they shoot that one and kill it too. Doesn't take much longer after that they do find Timothy. And when I say they find him, I mean they found what was left of him. They found his head attached to a small bit of spine. His face was twisted and frozen into a grimace of pain. His head was covered in scratches and claw marks. And then close by, they found his right forearm and hand with his watch still buckled securely around his wrist, ticking away. Amy was found next to the tent, and Timothy was found a number of yards away. And while Amy was partially buried, Timothy's remains were pretty strewn about in the foliage. The weather was turning sour, and police and the pilot were getting kind of concerned, and they needed to get out before the conditions made it impossible to fly. So they quickly pack the remains and as much of the gear from Amy and Timothy that they can find, and they scramble it together and they fly out. It is a few days before the weather would clear up enough for them to go back, but they do go back. And upon landing, they come across a couple more curious bears that are scavenging the remains of the bears they shot, but they were able to scare them away without killing them. They go to the site of Bear 141, the first large bear that was guarding the cache of Amy's body, and they cut it open, you know, bow to stern, pull out the intestines. The contents of this bear's stomach were exclusively human flesh, blonde hair, and clothing. They even found intact fingers and limbs. They go to the second bear to do a necropsy on that bear, but that bear had unfortunately fallen victim to predation by other bears, and they could not recover the digestive tract, so we will never know if that bear had anything to do with it. The necropsy of the first bear does provide further detail about the medical state of the bear. It was about 28 years or so, which is pretty good, had teeth that were all extremely worn or broken. And if this is ringing a bell with anyone, I don't know if anyone listened to episode 1 with Barbara Collister in Alberta. She was killed by a bear with the same dental structure, worn teeth, and broken canines. And this just lends a really significant hand to what we already know. Older bears with worn teeth, they have less opportunities than their competition, and they are driven to explore other options as a food source, and that option does include people. Timothy and Amy's deaths unfortunately make the first bear fatalities that ever occur in Katmai National Park's 85 years of history. At the time of their autopsy, after they had collected every bit of flesh that they could locate on the location, the remains of both couples weighed just 25 pounds, and it took 4 garbage bags to remove the contents of the bear's stomach to get it to a lab. It's pretty disgusting.
Brutal.
Yeah. So Timothy prided himself on protecting these bears, but in reality, and in my opinion, he constantly tested the boundary between wild animals and humans, and portraying them the way he did, he probably set bear reputations back for a good while, and he probably got a lot of people hurt or killed, and he definitely got Amy killed. When you go out behaving this way and setting this example and emulating it for others and filming it, you aren't protecting the bears. The bears are already protected in Katmai by the people whose sole purpose was to do so. His actions led to the demise of not only two bears that would have otherwise lived completely innocent lives, but his girlfriend, who didn't even want to be there in the first place. And so that, very sadly, is the tragic tale of Timothy Dexter, a.k.a. Timothy Treadwell, and Amy Huguenard, who were killed and almost fully eaten by brown bears in Alaska in 2003. Pretty messed up.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. So if you can believe it, it's about to get a little worse. The twist in this is that although the story's over, our too cool for school fact is going to be a fly on the wall. And by that, I mean, it's the real story of what happened when they died. Not the speculation, but the story. And how we know the real story, you might ask. Because it was recorded. In the few days while officials were waiting on the weather to improve enough to conduct the necropsies on the bears, they were going through the items that they had collected. And one of those items was a video camera. And it was at the end of its tape and had automatically like shut off, as tapes at that time did when they ran out of space on the tape. But they were able to extract the contents and even find the date and the time of the recording, as well as everything on the tape. The recording started at 13:45, which for non-military time people is 1:45 in the afternoon, which was only a couple hours after Timothy makes his phone calls and took his last video, which had happened at noon. His video camera was turned on and set to record, but the lens cap, for whatever reason, never made it off. But what was captured was a 6-minute video, which paints a clear picture of what happened, the final moments of Timothy's life. It starts with the sound of rain pattering. Amy's inside a tent, and you can tell the door is zipped closed. Timothy's outside. You can hear him vocalizing. Amy asks, with a quivering voice, "Is it still out there?" A very brief moment of quiet, other than, of course, the patter of raindrops on the tent fabric. Then you hear chaos, the sound of ground being hit hard, some gurgles, a groan, a yell. "Get out of here. I'm getting killed out here," Timothy shrieks. The sound of a zipper slices through the air, and with it, the door to the tent is presumptuously flung open. Amy is then face to face with a massive bear that is attacking Timothy face first. The bear at this point is likely on top of him, attacking him in his face. And this is what the autopsy suggests. Amy, in a high-pitched shriek, yells, "Play dead, play dead." The sound of Amy shrieking seems to temporarily move the bear away, likely typical behavior for this bear. Remember, he's got worn teeth. He's probably used to being pushed off of food sources. Kind of leaves, departs. The couple exchange a few words, mainly asking where the bear is it close? You can hear the fear in Amy's shaky voice. Steps can be heard moving away and then coming back. I think it's maybe Amy walking to the tent and back. Nobody really knows. But then it's back to Timothy, who can be heard grimacing. Suddenly more chaos and yelling. The bear returns. Amy screams at Tim, "Play dead." The bear comes back and pushes her off, again enveloping Timothy's body from above. Timothy tries to fight back, but quickly realizes when the bear leaves his face and bites deep into his upper leg that this is not an ordinary attack, and he yells at Amy desperately to hit the bear. His voice is heard fading beside a dragging sound, which can only be presumed that the bear is now pulling Timothy away from Amy into the brush. Timothy can be heard from afar yelling at Amy to run. The tape ends because it runs out of recording space. The final moments were assuming the sound of Amy trying to hit the bear in the head with a frying pan. Had there been space for it, the tape would have certainly caught the entire ordeal, including Amy's death, which happened right next to the tent. Timothy did not go quickly. He did suffer, and it is unknown how long it took for Amy to pass. The actual audio recording existed in two places. One was destroyed at the close of the investigation by authorities. The remaining copy is in the possession of Timothy's lifelong friend and co-author, Jewel Palavac. She was going to destroy it, but instead she kept it in a secured vault. There is a fake out there. A lot of people think it's real. It is not real. You might ask how I know. I did not hear the real tape authentically, but I did hear a portion of it. Not a good version. But what happened is there's a movie called The Grizzly Man, and it is written about Timothy's life and death. It's a documentary. During that documentary, the host is actually given the recording by Jewel to listen to, and whoever is filming him listening, someone took that audio and scrubbed it and enhanced it, and you can just barely hear. I mean, it's really shitty quality, but you can hear their voice and the sound of their voices, and the fake that's out there is not the real one. You can't even hear the bear in the real recording. People that have heard it, like the investigators that have heard it, you cannot even hear the bear in the recording. If you didn't know what happened to them, you might not even think there was a bear at all. While I was scouring the internet for research about this, I actually found the medical report and the autopsy report, along with maps of his campsite in relation to where his remains were found. And I will post that on Instagram, as well as videos that Timothy took of himself and the bears, photos he took of him and Amy. The autopsy photos do exist out there somewhere. I tried like hell to find them. I couldn't. I wouldn't have shared them anyway if I did, but the audio and the pictures of his death are under lock and key for good reason, I'm sure. Although I will say, I do feel like it would serve as a very good lesson for people to not do what he did and not treat bears like Yorkie puppies. But I do understand it's graphic and the family doesn't want that. You know, if it were just Timothy, maybe it'd be out there, but Amy's in it too. So I do get it. Right. I do have a little audio that I want to play real quick. It's not the tape. But it's a couple things. First is a description from one of the people who found what was left of Timothy and who knew Timothy well throughout his life. I do want to apologize because at this first video, they're actually at the scene of where the mauling took place. It's like sometime later, like a year or so maybe. And you can hear like bugs buzzing around, which just kind of interrupts the audio a little. But I'll post it to our Instagram again, so check it out if you want to take a look and see the video. But I'm going to go ahead and play that for you guys now. It's just like 30 seconds or so. Bear with me. Bear with me. Get it? All right.
Right up top of the hill here is where we found what was left of Tim's body, his head, and a little bit of backbone attached. And we found a hand, arm, wristwatch still on the arm. I remember the watch. And I can remember the watch. Here's a guy that... used to dive in the lake down here naked to scare the airplanes away. And here now I'm finding his watch and arm on top of the hill. And then here's about all that's left of the bear that killed him. A few pieces of rib bone. This bear was shot and drug off and eaten by other bears here right in this area. The tough thing out of all this is Tim would have never wanted to see any bears killed. Even if they had killed him, he would have been happy if nobody found him. Nobody found any remains. Nobody found his camp or anything. He would have been perfectly content. He definitely lived on the edge, you know, but he was a little smarter than everyone gave him credit for. He made it out here a long time before they caught up with him. Actually, the bear that wound up killing him was just a dirty, rotten bear that he didn't like anyway, you know, and he wanted to be friends with, but it never happened.
So that is words from one of his, you know, a guy that knew him very personally when he was alive. And I want to think he was a pilot. He talks a lot like he was a pilot, the way he says, you know, but he was there when they, he ultimately found part of his remains, the arm with the watch. So really tough stuff.
Oh, I have so much that I could say.
We'll say it.
You know, oh my gosh. He was there in a time that he didn't have any experience or any business fucking being there at all.
You're not wrong.
You know what I mean? And then his friend saying, you know, he wouldn't want, you know, any bear to die, even if they had saved him. That's great. And that's fine. And that's special, whatever. But he wasn't there alone. He was responsible for somebody else's life. And Amy is dead because of him.
Yep. Completely. She never would have been there without him.
She would never have been there. She didn't want to be there. And just the manipulation from the point at the airport to going back, even his reasoning for being there was so manipulative. Oh, there's this baby bear that I haven't seen and I'm so worried and I love it so much and da 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 da. Playing to her sense of emotion to get her to even go back. She didn't want to be there.
That's such a good point. I never thought of that like that. That was manipulative. Yeah.
It was so manipulative. And then to play those cards like that, and it sucks. Like the one thing that I was like, I was hoping this. I mean, not that I hope any of this would ever happen, but out of this awful situation, that at least he had to watch her be killed first. But that's not how it happened.
No,
she had
first.
To watch him be attacked.
Right.
And be
so tried to fight the bear off.
For 1 second, he had to be accountable for what he was, what
he
had done.
But he didn't have to do that.
But he didn't even do that.
And there were some people that were fending for him because he yelled out to run. and that she chose to stay and fight the bear anyways, and that she might have survived had she run. But, like, survive where? Like, you're in an area there's no trees to climb that you can get away from them.
And it's a grizzly bear. If you run, it's immediately going to stop and
chase you
and kill you.
And for somebody that's such a bear expert, he should know that that's the last thing you do. And even when he's being attacked, he's calling to her for help. Like, literally, fuck you, bro.
Literally. Get out here. I'm being killed. When I guarantee you the reason he was even outside of that tent in the first place is he heard the bear and he went out there to approach it.
Absolutely. Right. And to record it and get one last whatever. Instead of saying, protect yourself, wrap yourself up in tents, play dead, you know, do something, giving her any idea, this expert, this bear expert that knows so much, right? That he's just this big badass. Instead of telling her how to protect herself as he's about to die, he's calling to her for freaking help. Literally, fuck you.
Yep, absolutely. And it's so funny too that you had mentioned that of what you said about him calling out to her for help too about that, because there is a lot of people who also have like experience in psychology that point out that it's not her behavior. It wouldn't have not have been typical for her to turn on a camera inside the tent with that all going on. That's not somebody's first thought. But what they think might have happened is he went out there, was interacting with this bear that was normally one that he could never befriend. He was interpreting this as an interaction that was a positive one. And he was like, Amy, get the camera. And him yelling prompted the attack. That's what people think, because there's no way she would have turned on the camera on her own volition with a bear 2 feet outside of the tent.
No way.
Especially if he was already like starting to be attacked by this bear.
Right. And it happened like as soon as the recording went on, he was being mauled. Like it literally was so quick. And that's probably why the cap didn't come off. She had time to hit the record button and then it happened. But the thing, like that would not have been her reflex. That was his nature. He was the actor in front of the camera. He was the one used to punch and record for everything. That would not have been her nature to do that. So it's weird that she was inside a closed tent and she started the recording from inside the tent. And he was outside the tent. That is a weird fact. And you can hear the tent being opened. So like, and people who have heard the audio in full, you know, have attested to, you can hear what's going on. It's a crystal clear recording. You can even hear the rain falling.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm glad that the cap didn't make it off, because for the family members.
Oh, for sure. I'm glad it ran out of tape so you can't hear her death, because that would have been the ultimate trauma for her family.
Oh my God. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and really for anybody who's even listening to this, because I mean, I don't feel sorry for him at all. Like he made those choices and that's what he wanted. And I mean, make stupid decisions, get stupid,
win stupid prizes.
I mean, that's the way that it goes. I don't feel sorry for him at all, but my heart absolutely breaks for her. Like she trusted him
inherently and he let her down. He put her in danger and let her down.
He killed her.
It's really sad.
It's awful. That's awful. That's an awful story.
I do also want to play two more little audios for you. The first is just a really quick little clip of Timothy handling a bear acting aggressively. And it is unknown whether this bear in the background, I don't think so, because he says her name is the Grinch, and the bear that killed him was a male. And this is a female. It's probably not, but it's just the way he interacts with this bear. I'll post the video again on Instagram. But in the video, this bear starts approaching him really quickly. Like out of nowhere, like it's behind him feeding in a stream, and then it starts walking up behind him and he turns around and it doesn't like run at him, but it walks up really close to him. And this is the sound of this interaction happening.
I want to introduce you to one of the key role players in this year's expedition. The bear's name is the Grinch. The Grinch has come on to be one of the more frequent bears here in the grizzly maze. The Grinch is a female of about 5 years of age.
Oh, hi, Grinch. Hi.
And she has kind of an aggressive attitude.
Hi.
If I turn around too much, she'll bite me.
It's okay. Hi. How are you? How are you?
Don't you do that. Don't you do that. Back off. Don't do it. It's okay. I love you.
He talks to them like they're chihuahuas.
Yeah, literally. He does.
And like in this video, like you'll see if you went later when I, you know, put it up there and you watch it, like the bear walks like 6 feet from him and he squats on the ground and is like, I love you. It's I love you. This bear just ran up on you and you're squatting and oh my God, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? Like
seriously. Oh my gosh.
I just can't. Now this last piece of audio I have is a, this guy does not sugarcoat anything. I'm just going to say that. So just be aware because he has some opinions and he's here to tell you about them. But this is the guy who was a pilot and he actually helped recover Timothy's remains and helped like load him into the plane and get out that day when they were like running from the weather. So this is his rendition of what he saw that day.
As a helicopter pilot to assist on the cleanup after the Treadwell tragedy of last winter. I was in there the morning the fish and game officers were there examining the bear that had done the killing. The bear was all cut open. It was full of people. It was full of clothing. It was, we hauled away 4 garbage bags of people out of that bear. Treadwell was, I think, meaning well, trying to do things to help the resource of the bears. But to me, he was acting like a, like he was working with people wearing bear costumes out there instead of wild animals. Those bears are big and ferocious and they come equipped to kill you and eat you. And that's just what Treadwell was asking for. He got what he was asking for. He got what he deserved, in my opinion. The tragedy of it was taking the girl with him. I think the only reason that Treadwell lasted as long in the game as he did was that the bears probably thought there was something wrong with him, like he was mentally retarded or something. That bear, I think that day, decided that he had either had enough of Tim Treadwell or that something clicked in that bear's head that he thought, hey, you know, he might be good to eat. My opinion, I think Treadwell thought these bears were big, scary-looking, harmless creatures that he could go up and pet and sing to, and they would bond as children of the universe or some odd. I think he had lost sight of what was really going on.
That guy's fucking interview always gets me.
I couldn't keep it together.
I knew. I was like, oh man, that's gonna hit. But like, he tells it like it is, and he's not wrong, dude. Like, he did. He, poor Amy is the victim in this. Like, he got what he deserved. He did. He got what he wanted and what he asked for.
Yeah. And just like he said, though, like, the tragedy of the entire story is that Amy went down with him.
Yeah. No, honestly, that is the biggest tragedy. So I do this segment a little bit with Rachel sometimes. I find it very enlightening. So I want to know, what would you guys do? Now, you're Amy. You're in the tent. You're listening as your boyfriend, who you're about to break up with anyway, is outside being eaten by a bear. You have no spray. You have no guns. What you doing?
I ain't leaving that tent.
Yeah, I'm not leaving the tent. I'm going to look for whatever is in the tent that will protect me, like anything at all. I'm going to get in the sleeping bag. I'm going to zip it up. I'm going to lay very, very still. I'm going to, if the tent gets knocked down, that's just more body protection for me. I'm going to wrap up in it. I'm going to be super, super still until help comes. And if I can get to the satellite phone, that's going to be the very first thing that I do. Like, immediately before I touch the video recorder or anything, I'm going to get to that satellite phone.
Yeah.
And try and get help there. And then I'm going to anything that I can to protect my body from the claws.
The teeth.
That's a good plan. Me personally, I'm just going to run while he's being eaten and hope that the bear is distracted long enough that I can make a quick getaway.
You're not going to run, Amanda, because that bear is going to get you and they can see for miles and miles and miles. You're going to stay put, love. Don't run.
Yeah, and wrap yourself any blankets in the tent, that sleeping bag, just to get padding around, especially like your vital organs at least.
Yep. And be very, very, very still.
Very good advice. Oh, man.
And don't ever run.
And if he decides that he wants to get eaten by a bear and is out, that's on him. I don't know.
That's what I literally, I can't believe that she went out there.
Yeah, I mean, I know. I can't believe she went back out there and that they like, they were so close that she was literally at the airport about to fly home. And then they go back and the day before they're supposed to be picked up, they get killed. Right. Like they make it to the very end. Like that's just what sucks that she literally had, it sounds bad, but had they been killed on the first day that they went back, I'd feel still horrible, but not as bad. But she literally had a whole week of suffering and stressing for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really heartbreaking.
To answer that earlier question, though, I think I would have rather died from the overdose.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. Me too. That's why I was like, oh, luckily they brought him back. But I'm like, well, you probably should just let him stay dead at that point because Amy would still be alive, probably with a nice guy. Who knows?
Yeah, hopefully.
Then a bear attack. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's awful. So
that's the pretty horrendous story. We do have a question of the week for this one, and this is a fun one. This one's going to be, what is the dumbest thing that you've done for love? So you guys know what to do. Leave your answers either in the comments of this episode's question of the week, which I'm going to post on Instagram and TikTok, and I'll pin to the profile at the top, or you can message it to us and we'll talk about it on episode 12. I'm really looking forward to Rachel's answer. So if she's listening, I have high expectations. I'm just going to say. All right. So we have our joke of the day here. I picked a good one, so I hope it's a banger. So as you know, our jokes have to correlate. So it is a bear joke, so, to a degree. So. A man walks into a bar and he sees a bear serving drinks behind the bar. The man sits down looking really puzzled and astonished. And the bear says, "What's wrong? You never saw a bear serving drinks before?" The man replies, "It's not that. I just never thought the moose would sell the place." Stupid dad joke, but I thought it was cute. So
that's pretty good.
That's funny. I loved it.
So that is all I have for this one. Like I said at the beginning, there's a lot of different renditions for what happened in like Timothy's life before, you know, the bears. So anything that's not, you know, hardcore, like a document is open for interpretation really, because there's so much out there. So I really tried to pick the best sources. If I got anything wrong, please let me know. I'd be more than happy to issue a correction in the next episode. I want this to be reliable information, but I collected everything from Reader's Digest, the Grizzly Man movie, which was directed by Werner Herzog, Timothy's book Among Grizzlies, Wikipedia, telegraph.co.uk, yellowstone.bearman.com, which had a lot of reliable information. So for anyone wanting to utilize these sources, that's a good one. Vanity Fair article, which also surprisingly had a really good amount of reliable and verifiable information. Alcatron.com, catmybears.com, which was written by the guy who used to run the tours in Alaska and used to have almost daily confrontations with Timothy. I highly advise reading that. It is a very interesting perspective from the park services that had to deal with him every day. Of course, I cross-checked all the information that I was able to against the 25-page report from the United States Department of the Interior. This report was hard as shit to find. I have no one other than the good folks of Reddit to thank for being able to hunt it down. So thank you, Reddit. Within the report, there are incident records from every witness who was on scene, as well as autopsy description and findings, maps of the surrounding area of the camp, the state of Alaska memorandums that were issued following the deaths. I really like finding reports like that. It makes research easy. I would have loved it a lot more had I found it before completing 4 hours of research, but it was nice to have to fact check. Nice. It was cool. A huge percentage of the population familiar with Treadwell has misconceptions about this case. They think he died at night. They think that it would like happen in the middle of the night. But like I said, they did find a way to pull data from the recorder and it was turned on at 1:45 in the afternoon. So that definitely puts a different spin on the situation, because scary enough being mauled at night. It's also scary during the day, but it just gives a different vibe. Although I'm not sure. Alaska at 2 p.m. would that be night? Like I guess depending on the time of year. No, in summer it's sunny all time, right?
Yeah, not in the summer. Yeah, it's still light.
Okay, so yeah, so it wouldn't have been dark. So I don't really know why there's a lot of places, like even big time articles will say that it happened at night. But I'd be more than happy to share this 25 report with anyone. It is available on Reddit. I don't know how I found it. I just went down a rabbit hole. I have it saved. I can send it to anyone. There's really weird parts of it. Like there's a couple lines that are like scratched out, like before it was transcribed, they like scratched it out, and they're all to do with a specific government sector. So that's kind of like interesting and really deserves some delving into. Not really sure the reasoning behind that, but I do have the full 25 page report. I do not have the photos, but the description paints a pretty vivid picture. So Before we depart, I do want to add, we should adore, respect, and cherish bears. I know this story paints them in a really bad light, and these like man-eating monsters, but just people listening, everything that happened, it happened as a result of Timothy making bad decisions. Like, those bears aren't out there to kill people. They're out there to live their lives and eat salmon from the salmon stream and hibernate. When you put yourself in there, it's like sharks, you know, if you don't want to get eaten by a shark, stay out of their environment, make good decisions around them. Same rules apply. Everything Timothy did ended up affecting his girlfriend. I don't feel bad for him at all. I do feel bad for her. He did not prioritize her feelings. He should have gotten her a flight out like the second she started feeling uncomfortable. I did a really big segment on bear biology in episode 1 about grizzlies. That research was really done extensively. I'm confident in the accuracy of the research in that one, so I'm not going to repeat it all, but I do want you guys to go back and listen to the last 30 or so minutes of that one if you need a refresher on bear biology. They're really cool beings. I don't want this story or Jeremy's story from the last episode to make anyone feel like bears are like really bad. They're just wild animals and they're predators, and we should respect them as such. So that's my piece.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if you really want to protect animals, stay out of their habitat.
Absolutely. And if you're going to be in there, make good choices and don't try to pet them.
Yeah, no, don't do that.
Well, and if you're in their environment, like if you're hiking and stuff, just be aware of your surroundings and respecting the environment that you're in. Be aware and don't be, oh, what a nice big fluffy bear. I'm going to give it a big hug.
Yeah, you cut out for a brief second in that, so I missed the middle of that. Would you mind repeating that for us?
I was just saying, if you're out hiking and you are in their environment, just being aware of your surroundings and don't be like, oh, big fluffy bear, let's give it a hug. Just be respectful of their space, as we wouldn't want them in our space.
Of course. And like these lovely ladies, go out in groups. Don't do it by yourself. Make a lot of noise. Carry some, you know, bear spray is a really great defense. Carry that and a firearm if you need. In my perspective, I'd, you know, try to scare it off first, but it depends on the situation. If you're out hiking and you're in your land, I don't think you should kill a bear. If it's different, if you're protecting your property or your livestock from them. But if you're out hiking in their land and you just come across one by happenstance, I don't think that bear deserves to die. So carry some bear spray. Get it, you know, get it to teach it a lesson that people do not equal food. And for the love of God, if I catch one of you muzz feeding bears, I'm going to come to your home. Don't feed bears.
Yeah. Or any animal, really. Leave them alone.
Exactly. I mean, go like put a bird feeder up if you really have like a hole to fill somewhere. But like, please stop feeding bears.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
This has been fun. I wish this story was not as horrific as this one was, but this was fun. Thank you so much.
It was a gruesome one, but I really appreciate you doing this one with me. And I know it was a long one, but I just wanted to include all the information, because like I said, there was a lot of inaccuracies. So please let me know if there's anything that I missed, guys. And once again, ladies, where can we find your podcast? Can you drop all your socials, and do you have a date for your next episode so that we have something to look forward to?
Yeah, so we are the Suspended Sentence Podcast across the board. So Instagram, our email address is thesuspendedsentencepodcast@gmail.com. We're on Apple and Spotify and pretty clean and simple.
Lovely. Well, I love that.
And we drop episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays, Fridays, twice a week.
Dang, you guys are busy.
Yeah.
No wonder. Fun. I feel like every time I get on, I'm like, they have new stuff out.
Yeah. So our next one will come out every Tuesday. Yeah.
Tuesday. Yep.
Oh, guys, well, you heard it here first. So join into the Suspended Sentence Podcast. They have a really great show. If you have even a smeckle of interest in true crime, they are going to be where it's at. Let me tell you, go look at their Lisa Lambert stuff. It's amazing. I cannot rave about it enough. Really great stuff. Amazing. Final question, ladies. Do you guys know the 1-0 sign off? You're my third guest, so if you don't, I won't be insulted. Nobody else has.
I don't know the sign off. You
don't? Honestly, I'm just trying to see how many guests I can go through before someone remembers it, so it's no sweat, really. But again, what is it?
I don't know. What is it? I don't know. I can barely remember our sign off, and I'm the one that gives it.
Half the time we get our names wrong at the beginning of our episodes.
Half the time my dogs are in the background accommodating half of my attention span. So I get it. Trust me. But
yeah.
Thank you guys. Honestly, it's been a wonderful time hanging out with you ladies. I hope this was an interesting and that you learned something from the story that you didn't know before. I know that you already kind of familiarized yourself, but for everyone listening, stay out of puppy love and stay alive. Bye, guys.
Bye.